Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity.
We all need to learn more. It never ends. And sometimes you have to make people aware of that.
I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb. And this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Content marketing at its core is educational. It's about raising awareness not only of a brand, but of that brand's ability to help and to act as a partner. For many learning businesses, content marketing is the start of the learner journey and the way they establish both expertise and trust with prospective learners. Our guest for this episode of the Leading Learning Podcast, number 437, understands the important role that content marketing plays. Having worked in associations for a decade, Deirdre Reed started a writing business about 15 years ago. She now works primarily with association industry partners, and her goal is to help people through her writing. Deirdre also publishes Association Brain Food, a very popular weekly list of free webinars and other events, and recommended reading for association professionals. Deirdre and Salisa talk about content marketing, AI's influence on marketing, data analytics, the role of taxonomy and personalization, search engine optimization, learner journeys, customer acquisition and retention, workforce development and partnering with employers, cohort-based learning, unconferences, self-assessments as marketing tools, and more. Salisa and Deirdre spoke in October 2024.
I'm curious to get your thoughts about what trends you're seeing in content marketing. And I'm thinking particularly kind of as relates to learning businesses. And I want to hear about those trends. And then I have sort of a follow-up question about those trends, which maybe I'll go ahead and ask now, which is just about how those trends might kind of shape the future of continuing education and professional development and learning in general.
Well, first, just in case, the content marketing, you and I throw around that term a lot because we do it. You do. And here's an example. Content marketing, the way I see it, let's talk about the way Tagoras does it. I mean, this podcast is content marketing. Your blog is content marketing. The executive summaries and guides and benchmark reports and trends reports that you do is content marketing. And basically, it's all educational content. But the mission behind it, of course, one is I knowing you and Jeff and knowing a lot of my clients, you know, when you know something, you like to share it. You like to help other people. But it's marketing. It's positioning a company so that they can, first of all, spread awareness about their brand, spread awareness about their expertise, but also position themselves as a partner, a true partner that is there to help their clients or help their audience, in my case, their readers. We try to demonstrate that we understand what our readers are going through on their job. In my case, it's people who I used to be in those shoes. What is an association professional? What challenges are they dealing with? What ideas are they kind of noodling around? Our content is to help them do their jobs better and maybe expose them to new ideas, maybe to explain to the new folks some real basics about, you know, what you need to do to recruit members or communicate with your chapters, you know, simple things like that. We do it through blog posts. We do it through case studies, which are a little bit more focused on one particular, in my case, one particular association and how they use the technology. But through those success stories, you can not just learn about the product, but learn a little bit about how other people are tackling the same issues. So content marketing works. It drives email opens and clicks, and it ideally turns website visitors into regular readers, into warm leads, and maybe one day into customers or clients. So that's just so everyone kind of understands what content marketing in it is and the advantages it has for everybody involved. It's not just a promotional tool. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it because I'd like to have a mission in my life. And part of that is to help other people do their jobs better. So trends, it's kind of hard to talk about trends without bringing up AI, which as a writer, I have very mixed feelings about. You know, when it came out, I think it was like November 22, I'm taking a guess there. That was ChatGPT, the first generative AI tool that really, you know, people were writing jokes with it. And it was just, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I wrote blog posts about it for my clients when it was first released. I had to explore it and figure out what it meant to me and my business. And frankly, right now, I've, you know, after a year and a half, I'm kind of like, you know, it has its uses, but the human brain is certainly a lot more advanced these days. And I do worry about a reliance on it by marketers. I understand, you know, I work with marketing teams and they never have enough time. So I understand how AI does help them jumpstart a lot of processes, thinking about ideas and outlines, titles, these different things you need to do for Google, like meta tags and such. But I do worry about them relying on it too much and kind of weakening their own creative and cognitive abilities by just farming it out to AI. I don't know if anyone's ever seen the movie WALL-E. It's an animated film. And there's just one scene of them all going around on a conveyor belt being stuffed full of junk food. And I don't, somehow my mind goes from where we are with AI to that very quickly, which is, you know, that's maybe a little too pessimistic. But it does, AI has its uses, and I definitely understand that. And I'm not an anti-AI person. I think marketers can really use it to help them with jumpstarting copying and with videos, creating things that they don't have the technical chops for. AI is definitely helpful there. You just need to know its limits and not trust it, because it does hallucinate, as everyone says. And I had it once write a bio for me, and I had written books, which I didn't realize. So you really have to check the way, you know. Right now I say it's nowhere near a quality of writer who has the subject matter expertise and knows her audience. Of course, you have to know when to outsource to a real person and when to rely on AI. It's exciting, but just be careful. Several years ago, it wasn't so long ago, where data and data analytics just seemed like something that was belonged to other people, techie people, and those people with those kind of crazy analytical minds. And marketers tend to be more of, I don't know, good with words and people. I don't know how, right brain, left brain, I always forget which is which. But I think now, because of the tools that we have, especially these middleware tools, that integration platforms as a service, marketers can really finagle data that's coming their way. And that could be like a member profile, customer profile data. It could be learner data, it could be behavioral data, such as clicks and opens and page visits, even transactional data, you know, what people have bought. And using all of that, you can really start getting more relevant and more targeted in your emails and other communication vehicles. And if you're not doing that, it seems a little, it's there, the technology is there, and it's just a matter of making the choices of where to allocate resources and investing in some of this stuff, which is getting cheaper all the time. So the personalization, smart marketing, only sending people relevant content, I think that is not just it used to be a trend, but now I think it's kind of foundational. So the investment does need to be there. And that's a matter of educating boards, perhaps, or even your bosses and executive suites. Another big piece that's kind of foundational is, but will help with the personalization piece, is taxonomy, which you see a lot of content strategists talk about. But it's really, you know, it's not simple. It's a big job. But if you start doing it as you're going along, it's just tagging your content is what it's about. Because then when you have that, they become pieces of data, basically, and you can start really delivering a more personalized experience to not only your email readers, but your website visitors, in your newsletters. You could tag it by topic or career stage. And that way you can take all the content you have, those session recordings, get AI to rip apart recordings by different topics, and really start having little micro learning, little bites of content that you can send out as a content marketing, something free to get them interested and perk their interest to maybe pay for something later. So that's maybe not so much a trend, but you just don't really see it very much. One other thing that comes to mind is understanding the place of SEO in your content marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. And I see this a lot with clients who work with agencies and associations often do the same thing, where they're instructed to write blog posts using this particular SEO phrase and this keyword and following this outline. And it looks all AI driven to me. And the thing is, Google algorithms have changed a lot over the years. And if you're writing for your audience, if you understand what they really need, write to that. Don't be a slave to SEO. The keyword strategy doesn't nearly have the same power it used to. Google's gotten smarter. And if you write useful content, Google will like what you're doing. So it'd be a little discriminating in how you write. Write like a human. Don't write for the web crawling little robots from Google. Those are just some of the things that I come across, that the trend world and my world is the association world. And often we sadly are playing some years behind the for-profit world. So a lot of times what's a trend in the association world may have been like common sense in the for-profit world, not always. And it's a matter of resources. And it's also a matter of our governance structure when we're run by boards of volunteer members, volunteer leaders who are often maybe take a chance and take risk in their business, but don't always want to take those same chances when they sit on the board because they have a legacy to preserve and they don't want to be that board that lost the money going down that path. So we have a lot of really innovative, intelligent, generous people in our community who know what's going on and are on the cutting edge of everything, but yet they can't always act on it in their organizations. It's a funny place. It must be a very frustrating place to be sometimes.
At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more.
A couple things that occurred to me hearing you talk. One is around kind of the purpose of content marketing. And, you know, you talked about it providing value kind of in and of itself, but kind of it does also have this purpose of hopefully taking that, say, blog reader and maybe turning that into someone who might purchase a course or engage in some sort of learning experience. But then it also occurred to me that the content marketing has a role in customer retention too, right? It's not just the acquisition, but like if you're providing this value so that learner who came and maybe participated in one of your webinars or went to your conference, and then if they're going to their blog and they're seeing relevant content, that might be part of them that reminds them, oh yeah, this mm-hmm. organization has great content. I should look to them for my next learning experience, the next course I want to take. I guess any comments about sort of customer acquisition versus customer retention when you're thinking about content marketing, maybe for some of the clients that you're working with?
Oh, God, I'm glad you brought that up because, yes, I mean, the customer journey, the member journey, they're very similar as far as, you know, when I was speaking about boards always love the growth numbers. They love seeing the reports from the membership director showing the number of members growing and showing the recruitment growing. But what about retention is huge for whether you're talking about a learner, a customer, or a member. And that's the beauty of content marketing, is if you can establish that relationship, you are hitting them with ideally new content every week, every other week, whether it's a podcast episode or a blog post or a webinar. I always think you have to keep delighting your customers. Mm-hmm. There's so much competition. And it's not just competition, oh, they might go take a class at another organization. In a lot of fields, especially medical fields and legal fields, there is so much competition with other for-profit and nonprofit organizations. But it's not just that, it's just competition for their time and their bandwidth. That's something that the challenges that all marketers face and associations face with their members, even to get them to read their email newsletter and not just let it sit in their inbox. I think members are ever changing, learners are ever changing. I think reaching out to them and learning more about them, acting as if letting them know that you're not just pushing promos, like we've got this webinar coming up, we've got this, you know, all these paid things, you already paid dues, we want you to keep giving us more money, but also finding out more about how their interests and needs are changing, because we know that they are. I mean, I know, let's look at AI and how many of us have had to figure out how to do that quickly. There's so many ways that in different professions, because of technology or changing workforce or changing marketplace, where new needs are coming up all the time. So sending them a poll, sending them a little interest inventory when they renew their membership or on a year anniversary, maybe, or 6 months later after their learning experience, following up with them with an automated email, asking them about the impact of that. I don't know how many associations do that. I mean, did what we teach you really, did it work? Are you actually applying those new skills? Anytime you engage and ask questions to find out what somebody thinks is a sign of interest that a lot of organizations, for-profit or nonprofit, don't ever do. Then once they get your money, it's like, okay, thank you, goodbye. So, I mean, there's a new conversational engagement tool in our market, which is a fairly new concept, but it basically is just little email questions and you respond and it's automated AI driven smart technology. And depending on what your answer is, it will send you another email or let you know about something. I mean, that's something that never was possible. I mean, AI and automation are making what was once impossible for a small team. It's making it possible so that there are ways to actually touch your members and your learners, but not have to do it manually. And people are used to that. They don't care as long as the intent is good and you're giving value to them in response. So yeah, I think a content marketing program where you're always telling people maybe the what and the why about something for free, whether it's a free webinar for members or blog post or, you know, free little videos that you send out. And then if they want to dig deeper, give them a taste. And if they want to dig deeper, then they pay for something. I mean, that's a way an association and a learning program can certainly kind of keep people going. Or self-assessments. Remember way back when on Facebook, everybody was taking quizzes about God knows what. It was great a way for scammers to learn all your personal things that you might have in your security questions. But self-assessments are fun. You know, we all like to know how much we know. We like to see how we compare to others. Self-assessments, you know, put them on your LMS and send it out to people to see how much do you really know about this issue? How much do you really know about this? Or where are your gaps in your skills? And get people aware. The first step of marketing is awareness, right? Get people aware of where maybe they could stand to learn a little bit more. I think a lot of us think we know a lot, especially when you reach a certain level. That's kind of a cliche, like the CEOs who don't need to take classes anymore. But we all need to learn more. It never ends. And sometimes you have to make people aware of that. Self-assessments can do that.
So Deirdre, we've already been hearing a lot about technology and some of what you've already shared today. And we know that technology is playing in increasingly important role in how organizations engage with their audiences. And so I'd be curious to get maybe some additional thoughts from you on how you're seeing associations, maybe other learning businesses, leveraging technology to improve communications and engagement with their members, their learners, their customers.
When you said other businesses, something just occurred to me that has been one of my soapbox topics. When I write blog posts, especially for my LMS client, I tend to find myself pushing the same ideas years after years. And one of the great things about COVID was that it did make people look beyond what they've always done, including virtual learning, which I love. As someone who does not live in the Washington, D.C. or Chicago area where most association activities take place, I personally really enjoyed the fact that I got access to education, whether it be roundtables and discussions or virtual conferences. And I've seen for-profits really take that and run. The idea of membership communities for people who are in the same stage of their career or business development. I particularly saw a lot for folks who are doing startup businesses or marketers, and cohort programs are huge in the for-profit world and hugely successful and big revenue generators. For the kind of programs you apply for, you pay a little bit more money, but what happens is you learn from with a facilitator, instructor, or coach, and it varies. Seth Godin is involved in one called the Alt MBA that has gone on for years and is still a really popular and expensive program. But it's the idea is that you do have the content, which is important, but we also have the community. And we know the reason people join associations, even the introverts, is not only to get information and news, but it's primarily MGI is a membership consulting company in our space, and they do a membership benchmarking report every year for like a dozen years. The two top reasons year after year after year are education and networking. And networking is really just finding your community and finding people who do what you do, who get what you do, who you can talk shop with. Cohort programs are kind of like the upper level of that. You know, as far as commitment, they last several months, if not a year. But you can do it at the lower level. You know, what about a 2-month, 3-month program for a group of people? They don't pay as much as perhaps these big expensive programs, but you have coach facilitators. Maybe they're paid coaches with expertise. Maybe they're volunteers. Maybe this is a new volunteer category you have in your association. But where you have help people of the same, who are at the same career stage, interested in the same things, learning together, learning from each other, holding each other accountable, and lifelong relationships develop. And I truly believe that that is a life-transforming experience. Something similar happens at ASAE with their DELP program, which stands for Diversity Executive Leadership Program, a year-long program, application-based. Big, huge sponsorship by the Detroit, Visit Detroit, that subsidizes a lot of the travel and such for the people who are involved. And I know so many people who have graduated from that program, and it changes their life. And I mean, the people who were in that several years ago are in CEO positions now all over our industry. So you take something like DELP and you figure out, well, what are the secret magic ingredients and how can we bring that to our association? I don't think enough associations do something like this. Or if they do, it's the traditional leadership academy, which is fine, but maybe it's time to rethink what you're doing, put more virtual so it's a blended learning experience. People don't have the money or the time to travel as much as they used to. I mean, maybe they do have the same amount, but the perception is they don't. And do something that's more accessible to more people, people who physically can't travel, who for finance reasons can't, family reasons, employer reasons, and get them together online and maybe find a sponsor to help you bring them together once or twice a year so they get that irreplaceable in-person experience.
What are some of the biggest challenges that you've seen learning businesses face when they're thinking about how to effectively market those education programs and services? And then hopefully also maybe you have some thoughts on not just the challenges, but maybe ways to overcome those challenges.
Mm-hmm. Well, the time challenge is number one, your members' time, your customers' time, and proving that it's worth the time to open your email. And you've just got to prove it by demonstrating that it is. And that's where what we've discussed before about personalization and understanding and really using data as your friend, you know, the smart content marketing and becoming that trusted source. So when your email, your newsletter pops up in their inbox, they know that it's going to be valuable. It's not going to take them forever to read, or it's going to be a quick skim. Skimming is fine. And, you know, skim and then find what's important to you. That's a challenge that content marketing can help solve by helping you become a trusted source. Another thing is we all want to learn. We all say, if you ask somebody, what's the role of professional development? Do you think professional development is important? Any professional is going to say, of course it is. But then ask them, when's the last time they paid for any professional development? And you might find there's a kind of a gap between what we think we want and what we actually pay for. And yeah, I'm guilty as charged. I love my free education, but
well, association brain food, right?
That's right. But every now and then I do pay for things like the Learning Business Summit, which I attended earlier this year, which was really good. I have to say it was worth it all. So I think there's also a big marketing job in actually creating a audience of warm leads. Yes, your membership is in theory your audience, but what you need to do is take them from just being people who say they want to learn to people who actually do it. And, you know, of course, fear would be a great way to do that, but it's not actually the best motivator. They need to know that that's the only way they're going to get ahead. Inspiring them by better pictures of themselves. I mean, just using marketing and figuring out their aspirations and trying to connect them, but making it easy for them to take the baby steps. You know, an 8-week online course that meets once a week and has homework may not be the best way for someone to start learning. I mean, maybe you have to put them on a learner's journey and start them with small little videos and micro learning and then build them up to, you know, even an hour. A lot of people say they can't take an hour out of it a day for a webinar. All right, so try some 20-minute webinars and see, test, experiment, try, you know, with different segments and see what works for them. But just have something for everybody, for not just every budget, but for every time commitment. Tolerance. So that way you can kind of get their feet wet. They understand that, boy, this is actually something I enjoy. Maybe I will like start going to a webinar every other week or so, or maybe I will do this. It's just like volunteering. You can't ask someone to be on your board. You know, you have to start small with micro volunteering and kind of pull them along the volunteer journey. And it would be the same thing with a learner journey as well. So that is one challenge I see out there. And understanding the competition is always a challenge, and it's getting worse because for-profits have discovered that there's a really good business in lifelong learning, and it's evergreen. There's, you know, new customers coming along and graduating every day. So understand associations. I think we always thought of ourselves as like, well, we're the authority, we're the industry leader. But that's just not enough anymore. And loyalty, maybe your boomers and your Gen X are kind of loyal, but I'm not sure about the rest. So understanding what your differentiators are compared to your competitors. And once you start exploring that, you may discover you don't have any. So that's where you've got to figure out, like, okay, well, what can you do? What is your secret sauce? Is it your community that you can offer? What about you is going to set you apart from your for-profit, let's say, competitors? Because they probably have deeper marketing pockets than you do. So maybe if you can figure that out, you'll be able to take on the nonprofit. And I would say one thing that I see some really awesome examples, and I wrote about this a while back for workforce development. I saw an awesome example of a workforce development site on, I forget the name of the association, but they basically are the computer chips, semiconductor chips organization. And they had the challenge that associations always have is the younger generations and workforce development, working with employers to figure out what together you can do to attract young people to your industry. That's something I'm not sure I see enough associations doing. The nursing industry does it. The chips people are doing it. And they have websites that are dedicated to this that have interviews with members about why they got into it. What are different career paths? How many different directions can you go? Information about education, information about typical young professional career issues, you know, things like resumes and dressing for work and all the things adults take for granted. I guess you could call these kind of adulting issues they address. But I think that workforce development is becoming more and more an issue for many industries. And young people are floundering. I mean, I have a nephew who's kind of in his 20s, not really a smart kid, not really sure which way he wants to go. I've tried to point him in the direction of associations, but where he lives, there aren't too many. I think associations can really help a lot of folks figure out, here, come check us out. Here's maybe a direction you can go in all these different ways. Be a little more proactive about really reaching out to young people where they are, probably on social media channels, and reaching out to them with people who are a few years ahead of them, 5 years ahead, and peers helping younger peers figure out their direction. That, I think, is a challenge that everyone's wrestling with in education and community. Would also work just as well for young people as it does for their older generations. One thing I brought up, working with employers, I think employer advisory councils are a great idea, not just for helping to develop workforce development programs, but to develop any kind of learning program. I mean, we need to educate folks. The employers are the ones who know what skills are in demand. The employers in their HR departments or industry recruiters, all these folks know what skills are needed, where their skills gaps are in the industry or in companies. And partnering and working hand in hand with these employers through an advisory council that can help you design curriculum and help you figure out what it is exactly you need to do in the next few years, which programs you need to develop, you also get a lot of buy-in too. And then we all know people need to have the employer support to pay for any programs. Well, it's just like a technology project. If you get people involved from the start, when it's time to adopt the technology, they're going to be more willing. The same thing will happen with these employers. If you get them involved in your curriculum design, they're going to be more willing to pay for the results than if they're kind of locked outside of it and these programs are just presented to them. So that might help with that young professional challenge and curriculum challenge in general.
You've worked with a lot of different organizations on a lot of different projects over your career. Do you have maybe a favorite project or initiative that you could share that involves learning and kind of what made it particularly impactful or meaningful to you when you reflect back on it?
One that comes to mind is when I worked for the California Building Industry Association. It's the state affiliate of the National Association of Home Builders, where I had worked for 5 years, then was hired away by CBIA in Sacramento. And every year we put on an annual membership summit for our local membership staff. We had 20 plus local home builders associations. And so the local membership staff and their membership committee chairs, vice chairs would come to this. And the first year we hired somebody, he was a big membership kind of expert guru guy. He came and facilitated and it was your typical membership conference. The second year, the same guy called me the morning of the conference in my hotel room to tell me that he woke up with a stomach flu. And I thought, okay, well, so one of my colleagues from NAHB worked at our Southern California local. So I called her up. We got together. We figured out what we were going to do is we had the program. So we knew what we wanted to cover as far as basic topics. And we decided to let all of our local membership staff who had, you know, they're a very opinionated, smart bunch. We decided we would tap into them and we kind of did it on conference style and asked them to help us design the program together. So they loved that idea. And Allison and I facilitated it and shared a lot of our expertise because we had a lot of expertise to share. And we had lots of stories from other associations in the NAHB network from across the country. But we also made sure that we got everyone into small groups to do a lot of interaction. So it was a lot of group conversation and small group conversations. At the end of the day, that room, actually by the middle of the day, that room was buzzing. By the end of the day, people were telling us it was the best thing they had experienced as far as education, you know, in their career. So we felt pretty good about it. And it was basically because they helped design it. We didn't assume what they needed to know. And they just talked and the relationships were just developing like they hadn't in years. So future years, we just did that format over and over. It saved us a lot of money on speakers and travel expenses. But it was a really rewarding thing to put together, which we did with no instructional design expertise whatsoever. Just we followed our gut and it really worked well. So I still look back on that very fondly.
I like how that example exhibits perfectly what you talked about, the main two reasons that people tend to say they join an association, for education and for the peer networking.
Right. It's very, I tell you, that's one thing about over my career. This started when I worked at NHB, is to see relationships start. And I remember back some of my members on my committees at NHB. These women, I mean, still to this day, I see them on Facebook going on trips together, enjoying each other's company when they get together. And I think that is one of the magics of association, that it is truly, can truly be life transforming, which sounds very grand and such. But I've seen it. I've seen it in my own life. And I certainly saw it in my members' life before it even happened to me. So it's something I think we forget, and you figuring out how to capture that and put that in marketing messaging to even your members who already belong, because they still need to be sold on the power of membership. Maybe they haven't experienced it themselves. So the secret is trying to figure out how to connect them with that transformational experience.
So this is a question that we always like to ask our guests on the Leading Learning podcast, and it's just about your own practices and habits and approaches, maybe sources that you use for your own personal lifelong learning.
Well, I'm lucky because I work for myself and the whole day is at my disposal, however I want to use it. I read all the time. I read about associations. I read about, you know, the world at large. I read about technology. I read about organizational development. I just read, I get hundreds of newsletters. It's pretty ridiculous. But I read all the time. A part of it is for my own professional development, but also I do share things I do like in Association Brain Food. I guess I practice what I preach. And I mentioned how associations are transformational. Well, to me, it started with blogs back in the, 2008, 2009, I started reading association blogs by people who I'm still friends with to this day. That was when bloggers actually commented on each other's blogs. And I became friends with all these people who belonged to ASAE as well. And we were all on Twitter back then too, which of course has changed. But blogging kind of changed my life, which sounds it's kind of strange, but it is true because it introduced me to new ideas and new people and inspired me in my work. And I still feel, you know, that was my foray into professional development. And I feel like professional development like that on your own can still change your life. So newsletters, blogs, books. I always have a lot of books going, never work related. I'm not one for business books. I like to read fiction and history and philosophy and all kinds of strange things. I have a long queue of my podcast episodes. I listen to them at 1.5 speed so that I can get through more of them. I do listen to association podcasts. There's a lot of good podcasts in our space, like this one, but there's many others. I especially like hearing ones that have association guests on because that's my intel. So I can, you know, besides hearing them on webinars and talking to them in person. And I go to conferences. I mentioned the Learning Business Summit I went to earlier. I like to go at ASAE Annual. I used to go to Digital Now a lot. I'll probably return to that in the future. But, you know, I try to get my professional development in lots of different ways. I just never stop reading. I think that's the most important thing. And if you read a lot, you certainly become a better writer, too. If anyone's wondering how to improve their writing chops, read good stuff, not AI written.
Deirdre Reed is a freelance writer and content marketer and publisher of Association Brain Food, a weekly list of free webinars and other events and recommended reading for association professionals. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode437, you'll find a link to Deirdre's website where you can subscribe to Association Brain Food, learn more about her work, and find out how to connect with her on social.
At leadinglearning.com/episode437, you'll also find options for subscribing to the podcast. We'd be grateful if you would subscribe if you haven't yet, as those subscriptions give us some insight into the impact of the podcast.
We'd also be grateful if you would rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you find the Leading Learning Podcast valuable. Those ratings and reviews help us show up when people search for content on leading a learning business.
And please help us grow the Leading Learning community at leadinglearning.com/episode437. There are links to find us on LinkedIn, X, and Facebook.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.